Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. Canto 5, Chapter 17. Text number 10. Anye cha nadyas charvashe. Vashe vashe shanti vaku medadhi vid. Translation. Many other rivers, both big and small, flow from the top of Mount Meru. These rivers are like daughters of the mountain, and they flow to the various tracts of land in hundreds of branches. Text number 11. You could probably join these two verses together to chant them. It would be easier. Tachapi baditam diva basham kama shicham ananyasta basami shagina punya sishota boga stanahi bomni shogavitanhi yapadishanti. Among the nine vashas, the tract of land known as Bharatvash is understood to be the field of fruitive activities. Learned scholars and saintly persons declare the other eight vashas to be meant for very highly elevated pious persons. After returning from the heavenly planets, they enjoy the remaining results of their pious activities in these eight earthly vashas. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The heavenly places of enjoyment are divided into three groups. The celestial heavenly planets, the heavenly places on earth, and the Bila heavenly places, which are found in the lower regions. So, Yudha was brought from there, those lower places, quite heavenly, living very opulently. Yudha was brought from there for the pastimes of Krishna, with the Kurus, the sons of Dhritarashtra, pitted against the Pandavas. So they're very heavenly places, very opulent, sometimes more opulent than above, but there's some piety there. There must be some piety, but at the same time there has to be a very marked degree of sense gratification at the cost of others. We're talking about how Duryodhana come from the lower subterranean type, but a very heavenly place in this time, very often, very heavenly place. So the three heavenly places, above, and then on the earthly plane, which means Bhumandala. Nine vashas. Vash is one. So sometimes when we talk of earth or the earthly region, we talk of Bhumandala, nine vashas. Vash being one, which is the field of activities. So in Bhagavad Gita 9:21, Krishna says, Shinepunye Marchalokam Vishanti. When the persons living in the heavenly planets exhaust the results of their pious activities, they return to this earth. In this way, they are elevated to the heavenly planets and then again fall to the earthly planets. But notice he says earthly planets. The Vashas. This process is known as Brahmanda Brahmana, wandering up and down throughout the universe. Those who are intelligent, in other words, those who have not lost their intelligence, do not involve themselves in this process of wandering up and down. They take to the devotional service of the Lord so that they can ultimately penetrate the covering of this universe and enter the spiritual kingdom. Then they are situated on one of the planets known as Vaikuntha, or still higher, Krishnaloka, Goloka Vrindavan. A devotee is then caught in the process of being promoted to the heavenly planets and again coming down. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, E rupe brahmandara brahmate kona bhagyavanji guru krishna prishadi payabhakti atabija. Among all the living entities wandering throughout the universe, one who is most fortunate comes in contact with the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus gets the opportunity to execute devotional service. Those who are sincerely seeking the favor of Krishna come in contact with the Guru, a bona fide representative of Krishna. The Mayavadis, indulging in mental speculation, and the Kamis, desiring the results of their actions, cannot become gurus. A guru must be a direct representative of Krishna, who distributes the instruction of Krishna without any change. Thus, only the most fortunate persons come in contact with the Guru. As confirmed in the Vedic literatures, tad vidyunartam sagurum iva vidachet. One has to search out a Guru to understand the affairs of the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms this point. Tasmat gurum prabhagita jigashusha uttamam. One who is very interested in understanding the activities in the spiritual world must search out a guru. A bona fide representative of Krishna, from all angles of vision, therefore, the word guru is especially meant for the bona fide representative of Krishna and no one else. Padma Purana states, a Vaishnava guru nasha, one who is not a Vaishnava or who is not a representative of Krishna, cannot be a guru. Even the most qualified Brahmana cannot become a guru if he is not a representative of Krishna. Brahmanas are supposed to acquire six kinds of auspicious qualifications. They become very learned scholars, bhaktana, and very qualified teachers, bhaktana. They become expert in worshipping the Lord or the demigods, yajna, and they teach others how to execute this worship, yajna. They qualify themselves as bona fide persons to receive alms from others, prajivraha, and they distribute the wealth in charity, dana. Yet, even a Brahmana possessing these qualifications cannot become a guru unless he is a representative of Krishna, guru nasha. Vaishnava sa pacho guru. But a Vaishnava, a bona fide representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, can become a guru even if he is svapaccha, a member of a family of doggies. Of the three divisions of heavenly planets, Svabaloka, Balmasvaga is sometimes accepted as the tract of land in Bharatvaj known as Kashmir. In this region, there are certainly good facilities for material sense enjoyment, but this is not the business of a pure transcendentalist. Rupa Goswami describes the engagement of a pure transcendentalist as follows. Anyabilasita samyam janakamadhyana vrittam anukukina krishnandu shilanam bhakti uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Those who fully engage in devotional service to Krishna just to please him are not interested in the three divisions of heavenly places, namely Divyasvarga, Bhaumasvarga, and Vilasvarga. So here, Bharat Vasa is described as the field of fruitive activities. Therefore, sometimes Srila Prabhupada says, well, he says in the Gita, that therefore this planet, Earth, is sometimes seen as the field of activities. So the body, we generally take the body as the field of activities. But so in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada also points out that this earth is also the field of activities for all of us. And also in the 15th chapter of the Gita, it describes there where the material world is represented like a banyan tree, or the reflection of the banyan tree. So the real tree is on the bank, and this material world is like a reflection of the spiritual world. And it describes here also that in verse 2 that of the 15th chapter, the branches extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of nature. So where the modes of sattva is greater in the higher planetary systems, rajas, tamas, so gradually living entities take place according to the modes of the material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. This tree also has its roots going down, and these are bound to the fruit of actions of human society. So So Prabhupada mentions in the purport, the real root is from Brahma Loka, and the other roots are in the human planetary systems. After one enjoys the results of virtuous activities in the upper planetary system, he comes down to this earth and renews his karma, or fruit of activities for promotion. This planet of human beings is considered the field of activities. There, that's what he said. There you go. So that means that, of course, everyone, you know, generally accepts karma throughout the world. People of all different backgrounds accept that you can get karma. But it's very rarely understood that you get your karma on the earth. So you don't get karma in the higher planetary systems, you don't get karma in the lower planetary systems, you don't get karma in the animal species. You get karma as a human being on planet Earth. And that karma can be, or the results of your activities can be used up in the higher planetary systems. They can be used up in the lower planetary systems if you've got, you know, some not so good karma, but still there are various grades of enjoyment. And there's a little tinge of piety here and there. And then, of course, we can use up that karma also on the earth. We can use it up on the earthly planet in different species of of life, human, animals, like that. But on earth, as a human being, we also accrue karma. So this is makes this planet very important. The scientists, of course, are busy looking for life on other planets, but they haven't yet understood the value of this one. They're looking for value, some minerals or something they can tap into to make their bombs. Confused. So this Earth planet, of course, is called Bharatvarsha. And it was named after Maharaj Bharat, as also mentioned in the Gita, in the 6th chapter, that so verse 43 in the 6th chapter, it mentions that King Bharat took his third birth in the family of a good Brahmana is an example of a good birth for the revival of previous transcendental consciousness. King Bharat was the emperor of the world, and since his time the planet has been known among the demigods as Bharatvarsha. Formerly it was known as Lavritavarsha. The emperor at an early age retired to spiritual perfection but failed to achieve success. In his next life he took birth in the family of a good Brahmana, who was known as Jayabharata, because he always remained secluded and did not talk to anyone. And later on, he was discovered as the greatest transcendentalist by King Rahugana. From his life, it is understood that the transcendental endeavours or the practice of yoga never go in vain. By the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. So, from scripture we see that the goal of life is mentioned, that one should try to understand the self as an eternal spirit soul, come to that transcendental knowledge, and then try to understand one's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, and then acting upon that relationship, engage in one's eternal constitutional position as the eternal loving servant of the Lord. So that is the whole material world and all religions and different purification processes are meant for that purpose. Ultimately, the material world gives us the opportunity to fulfill our desires, but at the same time, the opportunity is there that we can actually, as a spirit soul, return, achieve the ultimate goal, and go back to the spiritual world, go back to Vaikuntha, or even Goloka Vrindavan. So, there are many different processes on the path, what is called yoga. So, yoga means that we try to link our consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness. So that is the process of yoga. And that process of yoga if there's a lot of fruit of activities while one is doing that, then it's called karma yoga. There's an attempt that I understand that somehow or another I have to link with the soul of the universe, whether he's a person or in person, I do not know, but I have to link with the spiritual, eternal, sacred aspect behind everything. I have to link my consciousness with that. But because, you know, there's a distant understanding of what that is, and one is very attached to this material world, one engages in a lot of fruitive activities. In other words, one is always trying to get some benefits from living in the material world. Some result or some fruits. I'm here, let me do some good business for my happiness while I'm here. And at the same time, I have some inclination that there's God or something, and I should try and link my thoughts with that Supreme Force. That's karma yoga. Okay. When such a person understands that they become purified and gradually understanding increases. When they understand that I want to understand more about my eternal nature as a self, and that if I'm the soul, you know, what is causing me to take body after body? Why can't I just live eternally on the platform of spirits? That so there's much more search for transcendental knowledge to understand what is the nature of the self and the supreme. Now, when that process is linked, that a person is still, as described in this verse here, they're still trying to get some benefit for themselves. It's greater than all material desires, but it's still a desire for oneself, that really what I'm looking for my own personal happiness, is to stop this misery. That would make me happy. It really got nothing to do with what, you know, the relationship with the Supreme. And one may think, perhaps if I become the Supreme, you know, if I could, I would. So, that verse quoted here by Prabhupada in Durport, very important verse. Anyabhalasa sunyam yana kavajana vritam anukulina krishna no shirana bhakti uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably without desire for material profit, either as a karma yogi, or gained through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. So, so in this life or the next life, one should not be trying for some profit or gain, even through the process of jnana. It is a greater platform of desire than material desires, but still, it is self-serving. When that, so that, but that yogi is still, there is a concept of trying to link one's consciousness with supreme consciousness, with transcendence. Then, when one understands, becomes very purified in that, that yogi may understand that I have to completely control the mind and the senses and go into constant meditation, that my mind can never waver for a moment from that platform that I am spiritual, a hum brahmasmi. Then also, the yogis who do become very fixed up in understanding I am a spirit soul, for them, that is a pathway that is possible for them then to understand the supreme soul. Because if we can't understand I am a soul, then we cannot progress to the point of understanding the supreme soul or trying to meditate upon the supreme soul. So they're called stanga yogis. But real yoga or complete yoga is actually bhakti, because from the point of understanding I am spiritual, I have a connection with the Supreme Spirit who sits within my heart as a super soul, and I'm meditating upon him, the next step is then to take up one's eternal constitutional position in active reciprocation with that super soul, without, for the pleasure of the super soul, and that is called bhakti. So therefore, real yoga is actually bhakti. And because and real yoga is bhakti, the real guru is one who teaches bhakti. And therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, so this is stated again in the sixth chapter of the Gita. There's that verse, of course, where Krishna tells that the ultimate end of yoga is this. Of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all, and that is my opinion. So, in the yoga meaning to link with the Supreme, Krishna says the most intimate, perfect culmination of being linked with the Supreme is done when one reaches the stage of bhakti and engages in transcendental loving service, bhajana. Now, in that verse, as we said, real bhakti, therefore, bhakti is what we mean by yoga done properly, full-fledged. So when we speak of, say, a mango, you know, we think of it in terms of the fruit, not the flower, not the bud, not the twig, the fruit. Although it has come from all that. But we think of the mango in terms of the actual fruit. When we think of yoga, we think of it in terms of bhakti. The other things are just leading up, blossoming, fructifying. Therefore, this verse quoted here, Anyavalasa Sunyam, it is mentioned here as well in the Gopala Tapani Upanishad in this way. Bhakti means devotional service to the Lord, which is, so we bring in the concept of Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, from whom comes the super soul, Brahma. So bhakti means devotional service to the Lord, which is free from desire for material profit, either in this life or the next. Devoid of such inclinations, one should fully absorb the mind in the Supreme. That is the purpose of Naishkamya. So the yogis are trying for a Naishkamya action, which is not searching for some fruit, either as a you know, the fruits of mystic yoga, the fruits of the jnani, the fruits of the dham. So real Naishkamya is bhakti, because all other processes, there is some personal motivation. The motivation to just give pleasure to the Supreme is not there. So one should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably. Favorably means as Krishna wants, as the Supreme wants. In yoga, you know, Sangha yoga, Jnana, Kama yoga, we're linked with the Supreme, with still as we want. There's something we want. But in bhakti, there's no we want. It's just favorably what Krishna wants. So therefore, that is mentioned in the scriptures. So it's not just Krishna saying this, but actually the Upanishads say the same thing. that the real purpose of Naishkarma is found in bhakti. So Chris, one may say, oh, we don't follow Gita. Oh, we follow the Vedas. Well, the Vedas say the same thing as Krishna. Now, so real yoga is bhakti, and therefore the real guru has to be, must be a Vaishnava. And therefore, in the same verse, the purport, 647, Prabhupada quotes this verse. So he says, if one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi. This stage is of highest perfection of yoga can be attained only by bhakti yoga, as confirmed in all Vedic literatures. So he quotes this verse to confirm, again, and this is from the Svetasvara Upanishad, that you can only attain this highest perfection through bhakti. Yasha dede para bhakti, so the word bhakti is there. Pita dede tita guru, tushaiti pita yata, okasante mahatmanaha, only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, who is teaching bhakti, are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So, the Upanishad, the Vedic scriptures, as Krishna is declaring, he's giving a summary actually of all of that is. Therefore, Gita is sometimes called Gita Upanishad. It's also considered an explanation of the Vedanta Sutra. So, his teachings have been confirmed by the compiler of all the Vedas and all the great authorities. Therefore, the guru must be a devotee, can only be a devotee. The word guru is meant for a devotee and not for us. which is what Srila Prabhupada mentions. To understand that, though, one may say, how can you exclude everyone else to the guru? To understand that, therefore, we have to understand what we're trying to achieve. What are the steps on that path, and what is the ultimate goal? The person who can teach that, their guru. And when you look at that, the ultimate goal of all yoga comes to bhakti, where you're most intimately united without any personal motivations, just for the pleasure of the Supreme. It means you understand the Supreme is the person who's pleasure seeking, and take to bhakti yoga and that, and go back to Godhead. So therefore, by understanding the different processes, we understand guru. Now, in the fourth chapter, Krishna says a similar thing, that he describes that you can worship the Lord and he may first be understood as Vishnu, the super soul within everyone's heart, and the super soul of the entire universe, the super soul of all the universes. If we perform activities, jaya, so we're performing some activities, and there's a whole list of activities mentioned in the fourth chapter. You can perform pious activities, regulated activities, authorized activities, on the platform of karma yoga, jnana yoga, sangha yoga, and all of those activities come within the purview of the Varnashram, up to the point of those who take sannyas, either as jnanis or yogis, and they're also performing regulated activities for the Vedas. And all other activities are pleasing to Lord Vishnu, and therefore they're considered jagya. Then Krishna says, so all of them, if they're performed with the goal in mind of self-realization, you'll get some benefit. If we perform any of those activities not for the purpose of self-realization, it's a waste of time. If one becomes, therefore, instead of being Karma Yogi, a Jnana Yogi, a Sangha Yogi, one becomes a Karmi, a Jnani, a Bhogi Yogi. Because there's no purpose of self-realization, there's no advancement. It's practically a waste of time. If they're performed with the purpose of self-realization and purification, then it is progressive and one is considered to be a yogi. And Krishna says that position is highly esteemed. The same sixth chapter, which is 46, a yogi is greater than the ascetic. So you've got the meditators, but they're not a yogi. And then the purpose of self-realization and trying to live for the Supreme is not there. Greater than the empiricists, greater than the jnanis. Without a concept of the Supreme or without a view for self-realization, you know, just always, you know, they love philosophy. And, for the sake of philosophy. I had a friend, when I joined the movement, I've told a story about a friend who had a dream about him, Tropishanda, he may remember that. That same friend, I said to him, because we used to have, you know, we used to talk a bit of philosophy, and especially while we're intoxicated. As I did in ancient Rome. Actually, in Rome, you know, the philosophers, to be a great philosopher, you had to be able to drink copious amounts of intoxication and still talk philosophy. They used to drink out of amethyst cups, because if you drink intoxication from amethyst, you're supposed to not get intoxicated. You probably did a bit of good business. So, anyway, but they're not yogis, and they're greater than the fruit of work. So Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. Okay. Now, then what we see here is that by that process, Arjuna asks the question in that chapter, what happens to the people who don't achieve success? You know, they don't have any position in material enjoyment. They've sort of not done anything to, achieve something. They've given up on their prescribed duties, as a good, looking after their family and their business and things, and they've, dedicated so much of their time to the search for self-realization and linking their consciousness with the Supreme. So they're not going to get any success there. And they'll have trouble in the next life. And if they fail on the transcendental path, then they're not going to get any success there. So where do they go? And again, that sixth chapter. What Krishna explains there in that sixth chapter is that Prabhupada quotes in the purport to the sixth chapter. I'll read the translation. So, 38. O mighty Arm Krishna, does not such a man who is rewarded from the path of transcendence fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a ribbon cloud with no position in any sphere? And then he says, this is my doubt, O Krishna, I ask you to dispel it completely, but for you, no one is bound, who's found, who can destroy this doubt. So we see there that it is confirmed by all authorities that the greatest authority on the movements of the soul is God himself. Therefore, no one can know better than he. And therefore, one must represent God to be a guru. And if one has no relationship with God and no understanding of God, how can that person be good? Because he has to represent God, who knows the movements of the soul. So these things are in this book for today. The Supreme Personality of God, it said, text 40, O son of Pritha, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. And here, at the last part of this purport, Prabhupada says, and because the Eightfold Yoga system is directed toward the ultimate realization of Krishna consciousness, such practice is also auspicious, and no one who is trying his best in this matter need fear degradation. So, if someone, Krishna says, be a yogi, that is the protected position. If someone is a Karma Yogi, a Jnana Yogi, and a Stambhya Yogi, Krishna is seeing they're advancing towards Krishna consciousness by the slow process, and they're transcendentalists. And that verse 240, Agreed 240, means that the little, even a little advancement on that path as a Karma Yogi, Jnana Yogi, Sangha Yogi, if they're trying for self-realization and linking to the Supreme, they are protected. There is no room for them. It applies to all of them, especially the bhaktas. It applies to all of them. Sometimes we generally think of that verse as just for devotees, but it's for those Krishna says, it be yogi. It is a good position because Krishna says you are advancing towards Krishna consciousness. But if you want to advance towards Krishna consciousness, you actually have to take spiritual instruction from a guru who can see the whole picture. You're in this rung, this is how you get up to the next rung. So a guru has to see the whole picture. And therefore, after describing in the fourth chapter all the different Vedic processes and ways that you can please Vishnu, either, you know, directly by some different, like the Sangha Yogi meditating upon the Lord, what have you, within the heart, or by just following the Varnashrama, you know, for the pleasure of Vishnu. But in all cases, one needs a spiritual master. So one can't say, oh, I'm following a different process, I'm following Karma Yoga, I'm following Jnana Yoga, I'm following Sangha Yoga, therefore, you know, we don't take a Krishna Guru, a representative of Krishna, we're following this. But you do. You actually need a Krishna Guru. Because Guru means one who represents Krishna. So just like we're talking about Bharat Maharaj. Now, many times, you know, you come across people who are Jains, and their line goes back to Risha, who's the father of the Bharat Maharaj. So I say to them, they say, oh, we don't follow what you're following. We follow the Jain system. I said, so you follow Risha? And they say yes. They always say yes because they know that is if you go way, way back. Most people think of Guru in terms of the last one. You know, these days. They don't bother. You know. So what happens? As Prabhupada mentions, the followers bungle everything. So the last one happens to have messed the whole thing up. They've forgotten the teaching of Lord Risha. Even the Jains, actually the original Guru is Krishna. Rishab is an incarnation of Krishna, but they're not listening to Guru. So Krishna sent the Guru, but they're not listening. You know, so Dattatreya, there are many people who follow Dattatreya. And again, some of the recent representatives of Dattatreya, they have some impersonal, mystic type of teaching, and Sandhi things, and they say things like, you know, God manifested in three special forms as Dattatreya, Paramahamsa Yogi or something, and someone else, you know, what the last person is saying, but in their line, Krishna has appeared to give them the full instruction, but they're not interested in that particular, so they don't actually follow their gurus. So therefore, Krishna, through, you know, his appearances as Dattatreya, Rishabh, and he has literally given, okay, you're on this path, you have some impersonal leaning or this or that or the other, you're going to make a show of being non-violent for your own, you know, glorification. Okay, do that. And this is how you do it. But just remember this, these are the further teachings of where you should end up, and that is as a devotee of the Lord. Those teachings are there, but they're just completely disregarded. But in all cases, one actually has to have a spiritual master, and that spiritual master is the representative of Krishna. And Krishna means he gives instructions himself, he appears in his different avatars, and then he appears in his different devotees who are empowered to preach Krishna consciousness, such as Srila Prabhupada. So these personalities, who, if they make some progress, if we can make, we can get good karma. Karma can be from fruitive activities performed properly in the Varnashram, you know, performing sacrifices. Karma, you can get good karma from Jnana Yoga. It's a different type of merit. You know, it's not exactly fruit of activity, but it is a result that allows one to go to the heavenly planes. And even as a yogi, you can get karma, or you know, good results, pious merit, some rewards in that sense. It's not quite the same as ordinary karma, but it is karma. It's a reward, it's a result, but it's still utilized, it's still meted out in the material world until one becomes successful on the path of bhakti. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport in the Bhagavatam, most yogis and jnanis, you know, reside on the higher planetary systems in the material world. The majority, very few, may attain, you know, merge into the Brahman. That's extremely rare. Those who just go to the heavenly planet. And yogis also. But when, as this verse describes, when they finish their results in the heavenly planets, they come back down to those eight varshas, or Kashmir, and places like Kashmir, and maybe, you know, as Prabhupada's giving an indication, you know, there are some places on this planet as well. And they enjoy, these are yogis, jnanis, karma yogis, and they enjoy this, you know, they have sort of slightly mystic abilities, and so they're not ordinary living beings, you know, they have a lot of facility for material enjoyment. After coming down from the very elevated planets, because they've used up that merit of being a Astanga yogi, of being a Jnana yogi, of being Karma yogi but not reaching perfection or coming close. They use up that merit they enjoy in this universe. There's a very powerful personality, but the results of that gradually dwindle, unless, of course, you can make advancement from the upper planetary systems and from the eight other different Vashas. But in general, the tendency is to just enjoy the results of your good fortune, sit on your laurels, as they say. And then when they come back to the Earth planet from there. So, but what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says is that E Rupa Brahmanda Ramate Kona Bhagya Vanaji Guru Krishna Prasadi Paya Bhakti Lata Beach. Prabhupada says, a devotee is never caught in the process of being promoted to the heavenly planets and again coming down. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, that verse I quoted, among the living entities wandering throughout the universe, one who is most fortunate comes in contact with the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus gets the opportunity to execute devotional service. And those who are serious and sincere in the faith of Krishna come in contact with the Guru, a bona fide representative of Krishna. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, after going through all the different processes, ultimately, you are in a purified state. You know, that you've got some concept that you're spiritual, there may be some concept of Brahman. There is an unlimited spiritual realm that you are connected to. You may have some concept of Paramatma. But at that point, you must associate with a bona fide spiritual master to just get the final goal. Or, at any point, from the beginning, if one has a bona fide spiritual master, but one is still very attached to being a jnani, or very attached to being a yogi, still if one has a spiritual master, some contact, that contact will push one in the right direction towards Krishna consciousness to make progress on as a jnani, a karma yogi, and a Sangha yogi, one will be able to execute that properly to the point where they can make progress. Or one can circumvent the whole thing if one comes in contact somehow or another with the spiritual master and just says from the very beginning, what is the whole process? And the spiritual master says, well, this is where you've got to end up. You end up, as it says in Bhagavad Gita 7:28, that's Yesham Tranquitam Babam Gidam Punyakam Ram Kingam Mohani Mukta Janti Mamudharata. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives, in many, many lifetimes. Piously means there's Kama Yogis, Jan Yogis, Stambi Yogis. In previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are free from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Again, same point. That ultimately one has to come to the point where one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that process of surrender is the process of bhakti yoga. One has to come to that point. As soon as one comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, or at any point, but if one does not contact the bona fide spiritual master, one will never achieve perfection, and there's a high likelihood that one will fail on that process. Well, it's almost guaranteed, because without Krishna consciousness, one is guaranteed to fail. And that we see, even personalities like Vishwamitra and Sanyani Subhara Muni, great yogis, great jnanis, bound to fail because the soul without the bliss of being in association with the supreme blissful Krishna cannot maintain that life of austerity Even if one is awarded, you know, some higher planetary system or one of the other vases, the soul is still not satisfied until the soul is 100% in the atmosphere of eternality, full knowledge and full bliss, and that position is attained in the association with the personal Godhead in the spiritual world. And therefore, one is guaranteed to fail because the soul cannot be satisfied on that point. It will always be unsatisfied. So, therefore, the recommendation is just approach a bona fide spiritual master, surrender to Krishna, and go back to Godhead. And as Prabhupada quotes in the sixth chapter, that one who is chanting the holy name, as the Bhagavatam says, if one takes up the chanting of the holy name, it's considered either they've gone through all the processes of the Vedas and done everything over many, many lifetimes, or if they chant the holy name and they haven't done that, they get that result. Either way, so therefore, one should accept the bona fide spiritual master. He teaches us how to chant Hare Krishna, the holy name of the Lord. And then the whole process is finished in a very easy and simple way. Yeah, can anyone challenge that? Good. All right, any questions? Yeah?
Thank you.
Could you have any basic introduction for the Visa? We learned that it's a collaborative scientific process. We enter the laboratory and we see the results. And we also give the examples. We also give the example, like, you know, when you put your hand in the fire, it will burn whether you have faith or no faith. Mm-hmm. But the verse you quoted in the sixth chapter, I think the last verse of sixth chapter, gives so much importance to faith. That one has to have a faith. He is the argument you need. So it seems a bit contradictory. In one sense, you know, the faith is not important, or, you know, it's a scientific process, but now it says that, you know, faith is essential for it to work.
Yes, yeah. Faith is essential. And faith comes when our doubts are removed by transcendental knowledge. So, on the path of yoga, from Kamba Yoga, Gyana Yoga, Stanga Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, there is an increase in transcendental knowledge. And transcendental knowledge has two components. One, that we are a spirit soul, and two, the nature of the absolute truth and our relationship with the absolute truth. So transcendental knowledge has those two components. We can't really understand ourselves fully until we understand our relationship with the Supreme. That's not possible. So you know, if you see a little screw, bolt or something laying on the ground, you can't understand. It doesn't seem to have any value. You can't understand anything about it. And somebody says, I know that operates this camera stand and makes it swivel. Oh, okay. Then you can understand its purpose because it's in relationship with the whole. Like that. So, transcendental knowledge removes our doubts. And the removal of our doubts increases our faith. The more doubts we have, the less faith we have. It's unsaid. Our faith holds back now. So the transcendental knowledge of those two components removes our doubts. So, with the example you gave of fire, that if one has no knowledge of fire, fire will act despite one's faith and knowledge. And therefore, one will touch the fire and get burned. So fire acts, and that one who has knowledge, they know, one, if you misuse fire, it'll cause you trouble, but you can utilize it properly and have a relationship with it, and then you won't get burned. So the Lord's energies, the Lord is described in the Upanishads as to be very powerful like fire. Very powerful. Can burn down, you know, whole cities, civilizations. But if we, when we gain knowledge, we know how to be in relationship with the power of God, the powers of the universe, then when we test that knowledge, so just like we test our knowledge of fire that we can use in a particular way, it's very powerful, and we can do wonderful things with it. When we test that knowledge and we see that, yes, we're cooking with fire, we're using it in so many different ways, in our factories, in so many different things, and it produces very, very good results for us. So we have knowledge that I can coexist with fire. And in fact, that's a very favorable coexistence. Without fire, you know, so many inevitable things you can't do without fire. So, knowledge of the Supreme is like that, that as you know how to handle the power of the Supreme, we coexist cooperatively. And it's a very good relationship. Everyone's happy. So, there's no contradiction there, you see. So, the powers of God act whether we have knowledge of it or not. Fire acts whether we have knowledge of it or not. But one without knowledge will get burned. So, this material world, so for instance, if you were to tell a child, even a 2-year-old child, you know, the most important thing they know, give them a little bit of knowledge about fire, the main thing you're going to tell them is, don't touch it, it's hot, it will burn you. Now, a little child, they may, you don't know what you're talking about, I'm 2 years old, you know, what's this? And I'll stick their hand in it and I'll get burned. And they think, you know, mum and dad, gee, they really know a lot, they don't know what they're talking about. So then they won't touch it, you know, touch the fire, it's hot. And then, so they can learn that at 2 years old. So the main thing. Now, what's something more powerful than just a little fire? The material energy. You touch the material energy, connect with it for the purpose of trying to control and enjoy it, you'll get burnt. You'll get karma. You'll take another birth. You'll get birth, death, old age, and disease. Don't touch it like that. See? Now, even a 2-year-old child can understand. You know, like, you don't have to be a philosopher. A 5-year-old child, you can understand that, you know, karma. You do something good will happen to you. You know, you do something good, Santa Claus will bring you presents. You know, they all think in those terms. And they go, you do something good. And if, you know, have you been naughty or nice? You know, Santa's coming, have you been naughty or nice? They have that concept since they're a few years old. So that concept of karma. So you can tell, and the material world works like that. And if you do something bad, or you steal something from someone, someone will go and steal your things. That's karma, or like that. So they understand. So that little bit of knowledge helps even an infant to deal with the powerful material energy in a safer way. But the material energy, its laws are stringent. It will act whether you know, whether you're, you know, if you say, oh, I didn't understand. The material energy will act because it's stringent and very powerful. Therefore, so it's not dependent upon our knowledge of it or our faith of it. Fire is going to burn us, and material energy is going to burn us. If you get on the road and you say, you know, get driving a car, it's not dependent upon our knowledge or faith that if we get on the road and we don't know what we're doing, we will come to grief in that car. If we don't know what we're doing in that car on the road, we will come to grief. Therefore, we can't say to the judge, "Oh, I didn't know that. You know, my faith was something different. I just thought I could do it in life." The judge would say, "No, you did." So therefore, the law is, you must find out. You must, you know, approach someone. If you're going to get on the road, you must actually find out how to do that. If you're going to handle fire, you know, or a chainsaw, you know, or something, or electricity, you actually are not allowed to use something that's highly dangerous unless you find out and qualify. You must. That's the law. So there's no contradiction there. Things act, and whether we have knowledge or not, or faith or not, it will act. Therefore, we must, it is our duty that we must get the knowledge. Yeah. And that knowledge removes our, you know, increases our faith of how to coexist with something very powerful and how to coexist with the Supreme Lord. Therefore, every human being must accept a spiritual master who is a representative of Krishna. Every human being must. And those that don't, they will fail. Even if they become yogis and jnanis, what have you. They cannot achieve the ultimate success, and the best they can hope for is they'll end up in some higher planetary systems, and when all the results of all their yoga and everything is gradually dwindles, they will come back down perhaps to the different vases, and then back on Earth again, as a human being to start all over again. Which means they've gone up and down, and it's just everything's just failed. It's just a failure. What have we accomplished? Nothing. It's a failure. Yeah. So therefore they can either do the same thing again, or they can say, "Okay, now I'll approach a bona fide spiritual master." And the spiritual master will tell you that this is what you have to do. So it's compulsory. Any other questions? Okay. So today is the appearance day of Srinivas Pandit. I think today is, yeah, it's the appearance day of who represents the spiritual master. Narada Muni, the ultimate spiritual master. So there's a nice day to reflect upon and how Narada Muni, even the guru of Vyasadeva, instructed personally by Krishna, appeared within the Panchatantra 500 years ago. The ultimate gurus and the Lord himself appeared to teach us this process, that just come across the guru, learn how to chant Hare Krishna, and go back to Godhead. Don't waste your time over millions and millions of lifetimes. So merciful. So in this day and age, Lord Chaitanya is like that. They're just going to come and give. Just before you waste so many millions of lives, let me just tell you something. Are you not interested? That's okay. I'm like, have a little bit of a shower, you know, and you know, let's do a little chanting. You want to listen now? Yes, I'll listen now. That was nice. Nice Vishadam. They're the gurus who, you know, who come chasing us. Panchatattva. So that is nice meditation. We may never come across the spiritual master over the course of millions and millions of years in the form of the Panchatattva. That's okay. we're going to chase you. It will be almost impossible for you to avoid Krishna consciousness in this next 10,000 years. That is true. Hare Krishna.